Okay, now we're back for the fourth section, and the first chart we have here is the data that's provided by Robert Shiller. Actually, both charts, the data provided by Robert Shiller, Yale economist who got everything pretty much right on the housing bubble and the stock market bubble. The first chart we have here is an Excel chart, which is available at his site. It's updated. It's listed as being it's the data that goes with Irrational Exuberance, his book, which is quite famous. So let's first talk about the top chart, the first chart. In that, the red line is the interest rates, which turn out to be interesting because it does give you an idea where interest rates might be peaking. There's some interesting information on that. Other people have taking that information and using it for research, but the more interesting one is the blue, the dark blue ones, and that's the price earnings ratio, as he defines price earnings ratio. And basically what he did to get around the problem of Wall Street fudging the numbers, instead of taking the price to the last 12 months earnings, which is called trailing, or even more fudgeable number, which is the price to the next year's earnings, the next 12 months earnings, he made various adjustments that were necessary statistically, but eventually the main adjustment was he used the last 10 years, the average of the last 10 years' earnings. So that way it can't be fudged. So the blue line is basically the price earnings ratio, which is going to be considered to be speculative at the peaks. And you can see 1929 was a high. The answer is that 1900 was high also, which is something that I really didn't notice, and would have, and then you can see that the price earnings ratio for a high level in 1900 came down to a low in 1920, and that if the price earnings ratio is that's cayenne color, you have to go to a pinkish purple line with an arrow pointing to it. That's about 7. And that is the P/E ratio at the 82 low. A lot of people don't know that the 74 low is the low in price, but the low in price earnings ratio is the 72 low. This way, ahead has the second bottom, and that's why the mega T is correctly drawn. It's low in the price earnings ratio, and that low is that low is about 7. So if you come back and you look at the low in 1920, it's below 7. And if you look at the low in the 32 area, you can see maybe it's like 6. And maybe the one in 20 is 5, and the one in 32 is 6, and it's 7 in the 1982 low. The present price earnings ratio based on this ratio is a little bit below 20. And if you go to the site, you can get it every month. It's all calculated because you have to do a lot of adjustments for various factors that are considered to be important, and you recompute all the ratios. So the question is, why is it the people that recommend common stocks tell you about the interest rates are low and that's favorable, but they don't tell you the P/E ratio is nowhere near being near a major bottom? It is becoming increasingly obvious that you are going to a major bottom. And the answer is, they don't want to say it because they'll get fired. So it behooves one to know know what the true picture is. And Shiller's the guy that went out, and it could only come from academia. If you look at some of the academics who are promoting common stocks, they'll never tell you this because it's an anti-promotional element for ever owning common stocks until you can see something that looks reasonable, given that you were having some kind of a problem. You can see the influence of the 40-year cycle in the peaks in the you get a peak. You got a peak in 2000. You got a peak in the late 60s. You got a peak in 1929. And you got a peak in 1900. And so in some way you can get the idea that you're moving into something. It takes 3 or 4, maybe 5 decades, depending on how things go, before you run around for these completed cycles. But when you take that into a consideration, that you certainly have a lot of time for this thing to come down to get back to the cayenne colored, or fuchsia colored, I guess it's called, low. And if you make the computation, as I pointed out last week, you're going to end up with a low number. And so that's an example of keeping track of just a bunch of, you know, important but relatively simple and easy to understand indicators to keep your eyes open to potential problems. So then we go on to the next chart, which is also available in spreadsheet form, but I happen to have gotten this spreadsheet, Bill Marsh of the New York Times, he sourced it out. I guess I should get the data and put it in so that I'm not violating somebody's copyrights here. But the point that was made in this chart is that there's a sort of a norm, because what he's doing is I'm going to relate this chart to another thing that I let me explain the other thing that I got that goes along with this. When the internet first came out, I got a very good I started searching for a lot of interesting things, and I found a study of real estate real estate values. It wasn't home values, it was property, which included the land and the home. In the city of Amsterdam, which is an old city, and it was down in the central part where you have this power of place. It's a core district. Amsterdam is a core city, strategically located, and they had information that goes, because the country is, you can go back further than the United States, you're able to get over two centuries of data. And because they kept very good records of the real estate, you know, if it was divided or how it was transferred and the price that it was transferred, they were able to deduce the rate of return on real estate in this central location over a very long period of time. The conclusion that they had was that they, over this very long period of time, it's true that the real estate had had its ups and downs and did very well. But when you subtracted the inflation from it, in other words, found that the return above some kind of a basket, which would involve inflation, presumably in Amsterdam, the superiority of the real estate was I think it was a fraction of 1%, but it was a higher fraction of 1%. So that means that, for example, in the United States, you can generally take numbers like 4% is sort of a guess at inflation, at least as far as if you go back long enough, average it out over a long enough time period. That means that if it was 4% in Amsterdam, that what they were making is 5% per annum, but 4% of it was being eaten up and just hedge against inflation. Yeah, and so that's what the real estate didn't necessarily make you a lot of money, but it was a very good hedge against inflation, and that's not like making money at it. Okay, in this chart here, what Shiller's done is he's factoring out the effects of inflation, which is, you know, somebody has to go through that and come up with it. And what I tried to show in this chart was that there's a cycle at work, because you went from you know, after you make the adjustment, if you go from a peak of 120 into 66, which is the low in the 1920 time period, which incidentally shows up with the PE ratios in the if you look okay, so that ratio is it was reduced by a factor of 1.8, and then if you look at the bubble that we had in recent times, which is up to 199 from 110, that is also 1.8. So that's the swing around the norm. Actually, in my trading bands, I use a factor of 1.8 as the standard it's 1.8 standard deviations around the energy or the channels. The numbers just keep showing up, so I can put it in the charts, because I keep finding out the calculation. But basically, if you say that the 120 was the right number, you can go down by a factor of 1.8, and that's where you draw your channel limits on the real estate. But the interesting thing about the home prices, you see that they have a low at 120 in 1920, and if you look at the PE ratio in stocks, you find out that they have a low in 1920 also. So it turns out that real estate and stock prices, in terms of price earnings ratio, are completely correlated. You can see the peak is in 2000 in common stocks for the price earnings ratio. There is another peak in the 2007-ish time period, but you know it's relatively close. And there was a secondary low in PE ratios in 32, and there was another one after the in the wartime, but that could have something to do with the war as much as anything else. There is a secondary low in the stock market as well. You can see that in the chart, because almost all major bottoms have a flashback within the next decade of the first low. So anyway, the story that is about the crisis opportunity is, well, if you're going to buy real estate, you go down to this crisis opportunity business, and then you look around for real estate, that would be one option of your brain. But then again, you would always have to ask the question, is the real estate cheap? And since you're coming off of a bubble here, we don't know where the real estate's going to end by the time you get to that point, but it would be worthwhile taking a look to see whether the real estate was actually depressed. It's possible that you could have some kind of a real crisis where momentarily you got a real good value, but you don't have to be aware that real estate is not likely to turn up and just go gangbusters on the upside. In fact, you could say there's going to be a lot of damage over a long period of time. This dashed line, I guess, was put in by Bill Marsh, and he's showing it coming down sort of like it's going back to normal. But the way these bubbles work is you don't go back to normal. You go back and you just sort of, maybe you drag it out for a long period of time, which could be like 40 years, 50 years, something like that, and you end up in a area where you're below the mid channel line. So if you put channels around this, which is difficult to do because you don't have enough data, you don't have enough swings, you're very likely to end up in a long-term period finding out that real estate is not as attractive as you might think because it's the most recent bubble. So maybe if one want to find real estate outside the country or something like that. That brings you to another question as to whether you covered all the bases here. Well, we covered a lot of the bases, but these are all well-known bases. One that you haven't covered, which could be an interesting one, is emerging markets, either in stocks or emerging markets in bonds, for the next time that you come in for a crisis, because they're relatively early in their development, and it's almost always easier to get something to run real good when it doesn't have a lot of history, because there's no speculation in that time period. In the case of China, which is the obvious one, if you could get a crisis and you could buy some Chinese stocks, that would be very good. But it was better to have bought China when it was just first developing, coming up when communism was going down, because it had never run into a speculation in the late 90s. But if you could have gotten it back then, that might have been better. So, but emerging markets is the one that hasn't been touched yet. So that you want to look at that one. Okay, so I just thought that was an interesting tour to see what some of the big picture items are. I thought the PE ratio was a real eye opener, because the Wall Street never, if you fool around with Wall Street long enough, you think they've told you everything, but they don't tell you about this, okay? Because they don't want to talk about it. So keep that under your hat, and then I'm going to come back with a brief summary of some interesting thing that Mark Farber has in his book Tomorrow's Gold, and just summarize with another view that I think is also worth keeping in mind.